Welcome back to the Renaissance Foundation podcast, a podcast about inspiration made by young people at our youth charity. We work to transform the lives of young carers and hospital patients in London by inspiring them to achieve their full potential. I'm Corey, a member of staff at Renaissance Foundation, and I intro and edit the podcast. I'm going to keep this intro super short for this episode, as we had so much fun chatting with British Airways pilot Gokul Ganganer. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with us and putting a smile on our faces and answering our questions. We asked him so many questions and he literally answered every single one. We could have genuinely recorded this for hours and we'd love to get you back to ask more. Thanks so much for sharing your career journey, advice and inspiring us. We have young people at RF looking to become pilots themselves and it genuinely means a lot that you took the time to speak with us, answer questions and laugh at our pilot slash plane memes. The brilliant music used in our podcast is created by a young leader called Zhao. Thank you, Zhao. We can't wait to hear the new tunes you're working on at the moment. Best of luck with everything. If you like any of our content or feel inspired by a guest and young people, please subscribe, share and look at our website to find out how to donate. renaissance-foundation.com.
Today's question, we're going to do, are you a Coke or Pepsi person? So I'll start. Hi, everyone. I'm Nisha. I'm not in school anymore. And I'm a Pepsi person because I think Pepsi has more bubbles in and I really like that. And I am going to nominate, let me go to Georgie.
I'm in year eight. I'm a Pepsi person and I nominate Angus.
Hello, my name is Angus. I'm home education, home ed. I've got no idea what school year I'm in. I'm a Coke person because, well, I've only had Pepsi once. Fair enough. Very, very good. Very good shout. Thank you. Should we pick Demi to go next, please?
Hi, I'm Demi. And I'm more of a Coke person because I like cherry Coke. Can I pick Mona next?
Hi, I'm Mona. I'm in year eight and I'm more of a Coke person because they're more flavoured, I think. And I nominate Osei.
I am Osei. I already gave an introduction. I am 17. See, I'm a neither Coke or Pepsi person, but just for the sake of the argument, I'm just going to say Coke because that's just what I see around. That's what my brother likes. So I am going to pass it on to... Has Natalie gone? Yeah, Natalie.
Thanks, Osei. Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie. I am much too old to be at school. I don't even remember school anymore. This is totally non-controversial. It's a Diet Coke all the way for me, preferably in a glass with ice and lemon on a beach somewhere. But if not, happy to have it at my desk. Who's not been yet? I'm just having a look. Oh, sorry, Jarell. I couldn't see you on my... my screen. Do you want to go next? Oh, it's in the chat. So this is from Jarell. Hi, I'm Jarell. I'm 15 in year 10. Oh, and I don't really drink fizzy drinks.
Wow, that's a controversial but healthy opinion. I like that. I like that. But I'll go next because I'm definitely liking the ideas from everyone about Coke or Pepsi. I have to say I'm a Coke person because it was such a novelty to get all the extra flavors. I used to get on the train to Leighton to go to a certain Burger King to try out like strawberry Coke and stuff like that. So yeah, Coke is still a novelty to me. And I'm going to pick Grace to go next.
Hi everyone, I'm Grace, also not in school anymore, and I am very much a Pepsi Max person because I think it's the sweetest and I have a massive sweet tooth, which I know is terrible. And I've just seen we've got from Rosie in the chat. So she says, hi, I'm Rosie, 17, first year of college and Pepsi. Yes, agreed.
So hi everyone, I'm Sat. I'm past school now and I think that I'm actually not fussy, really, Coke or Pepsi, but for me, it goes really good with a takeaway pizza. Like, you just can't have takeaway pizza without Coke. It just helps it go down. So that's my one. And then, yeah, happy to hand over to Nisha.
Yeah, thanks. Gokul, maybe before we go into the talk and hear how you became a pilot and your journey, do you want to also do this introduction?
Of course. Yeah. So my name's Gokul Ganganer, and I don't school year 27, so for like year 22 or something like that. Coke or Pepsi? Definitely Coke, I think. You were all talking about different flavors, so I do remember Coke vanilla being pretty much my go-to drink back in school. Not sure if it's still in fashion anymore.
Thank you so much. So yeah, let's get started. I'd love to hear about how you started this journey to become a BA pilot. What kicked it all off?
So when you speak to most pilots, I think they'll remember vaguely roughly what sort of time it was. They might remember roughly where it started. For me, it's a bit weird because I remember the exact day and not quite the year, but exactly where I was when it was on the way back from my last day of year six when my uncle, who used to work for British Airways, he just randomly said, "I think you should be a BA pilot one day." And since then, it sort of stuck. And fortunately, about 3 years ago, so I've been at BA about 3 years now. So school, university, flying training, and then 3 years on the line with BA.
So what was that process like from leaving school, going to university, getting the training, and then taking your first flight?
Yeah, it's long. I mean, I remember at school, it can seem so far away. So they definitely did at the time as well. And not too dissimilar to the young people of today, where, or certainly you guys that are at school, where when I was going through school, the financial crash happened in 2007, 2008. So pretty much everywhere stopped recruiting for that time. So it did seem like quite a long way away. But fortunately, after 2010, British Airways started a cadet program, so a sponsored cadet program of sorts, where called the Future Pilot Program. So I'd always wanted to go to university and try and at least have a backup if, for whatever reason, it couldn't work, and applied in my second to last year of university, and fortunately got in, and then spent 2 years, training from in a variety of locations before starting with BA. It's quite a long process. So I know that sounds like, I think from start to finish, that was probably, it was the 2 years of flying training, but obviously you've got to get yourself ready at university, do all the right things, make sure you do well in school. It was a very long process, but when you sit in the seat for the first time, it was worth it 100%.
And what was that first flight like? Do you remember where you were flying?
I do, yes. Before you're allowed to take passengers, they make you go in an empty plane with some very, very, very brave flying instructors who will basically sit and watch you do 6 takeoffs and landings minimum. So we flew, me and all my other friends who were at the same point, on one bright April day, flew to this tiny airport in France called Châteauroux. And I didn't get to go on the first day, so stayed overnight. And I was first person to do their takeoffs and landings on the second day. And you're quite nervous until you get in the seat. But then once you get in the seat, it's basically what you've trained for your entire life. So you just have the best time and enjoy it. And it's a day like no other. I don't think it's the only time you'll ever have an empty plane with your friends in the back where you're just flying it visually out the window and just doing takeoffs and landings repeatedly. And then I think 2 days later was my first flight to Dusseldorf. So Dusseldorf in Germany and back. And then we night stopped in Frankfurt for the night. It was a pretty long day, so I don't remember. It was quite a lot going on that day, so I don't remember the exact details, but I just remember the overall feeling of having made it, basically.
And what's your favourite thing about being a pilot?
That's a good question. I think it's got to be the flying. Yeah, so I think if you ask most people, it'll be the flying, because that's essentially what got us into the job. the ability to take control of really complex, very technical pieces of equipment that are worth millions of pounds with hundreds of people on, to get them safely from A to B. To do the flying part is absolutely what the job's all about. There are other stuff that comes with it. So getting to stay in some really cool places in Europe and getting to see Europe. And for the guys that eventually go onto long haul and onto the bigger jets, going around the world and getting to do that as a job, that's pretty cool as well. But yeah, it's mostly about the flying, I think, for most people, and certainly is for me anyway. There's never a day I don't look forward to going to work, which is the main thing.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is a really good point to open it up to some questions. So I think, Demi, you had the first question in the chat. Do you want to come on the mic and ask it?
Okay, so my question is... So my question was, when booking a flight for a holiday, do you get more of a discount than cabin crew?
No, is the shortest answer to that. No. So there is, I mean, we're very fortunate, especially at British Airways, where we have extensive staff travel, which is every time I talk about what I do, that's always the first question from most people. In terms of discounts, no, there's no more discount than the cabin crew, just purely because of our contracts negotiated through the unions with British Airways. We get one, what they call a free ticket every year. So essentially you'll get a ticket for you and someone else to go wherever you want on the network. It's not a firm ticket, so essentially if the flight was full, the flight would be full and you'd have to wait for the next one. But it gives you such a priority that if there are any seats free, that you'll then get put into business class minimum. But if they're first for captains, they can get into first. But then, so that's just one part of it. And then on top of that, you get unlimited number of standby tickets. So you'll pay a nominal fee in taxes, which is much lower than booking the ticket outright. And if there's seats on a particular flight, you and people you've nominated can go pretty much anywhere on the BA network, really, and beyond, in certain cases of staff travel.
Thank you. And I think the next person who had put their question in the chat was Ose.
Hi, so my question was, like, what was your general education like? So, like, how did, like, you start off in, like, school and then uni and then training and, like, applying for all that kind of things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's probably the one I hear the most, other than, apart from the staff travel, just about education. I think there's this idea that people who go into flying generally, but certainly to be pilots, you have to be of a certain way, or you need to be really academic, or you need to have a degree. And you know, having actually made it here, that's absolutely not the case. It's one of the great best things about the job is that it's so diverse. So it's people from all variety of backgrounds. So for example, yes, I did go to university and I did engineering at university, but I didn't finish because I got onto the program. Whereas there are others that went to, say, Oxford and Cambridge, did law, did medicine. There are some that came straight out of school, so didn't go to university at all, and got on. So it really does depend. I think the advice I give to most young people that ask in particular is, it's always good to have a backup generally, just in case, because there's so many things that could stop you along the way. For example, medicals. You've got to get a medical done every year. And if one year you don't pass that medical, and that leads to then you losing your job, you need to have something to fall back on. And the best thing to do with that is to do as well as you can at school and to maybe think of another career path to have in your back pocket. But in terms of specific subjects, not really anything in particular. Just whatever you enjoy doing, and if you enjoy doing it, whatever you then think you can do well in further down the line.
Thanks. I've got a follow up on that. What is a medical?
Yes, thank you. So if I do use technical terms, please do correct me because I'm so used to them now. So medical is, it's just an examination that happens every year, which sounds a lot scarier than it actually is. So essentially, just to make sure that the people in charge of the aircraft, because obviously the worst thing that could happen, I guess, is that your pilots end up incapacitated because of medical reasons on a flight. So they try to minimize that by having us take official medicals every year. And it's basically an examination that just tests things like your eyesight, just basic things like that, your blood pressure, iron levels, you know, just to make sure it's all healthy. It doesn't need to be, you don't need to be super fit and healthy. And actually quite a lot of pilots aren't, but it just needs to be safe. Per se, so just making sure that you're fit to fly and that you wouldn't have any issues if you were to go flying. You do that every year, then above the age of 40 you get the joy of doing it every 6 months because you're apparently more of a risk.
So another follow-up, this is the last follow-up on that. So along with that, so do you have like a specific like health regimen that you follow? Is there anything like you make sure you like don't eat to make sure like you are as fit as you can?
I'm probably one of the worst people to ask this because there are people that take it really, so are very, very healthy. And it's a job where, because you're sat down for a long time, it's quite important to try and do exercise. So a lot of guys will go use the gyms down route in the hotels, or there's a sports club at BA. So they've got access to gyms, really good gyms in some of the places we go. So a lot of guys will do stuff like that, do a lot of cardio. I think in terms of eating, I've gotten better at it. So admittedly, when you start, there's this temptation where, because you get allowances down route, so you basically will go, as soon as you get there, you'll go for, you know, a bite to eat with the crew or the captain. And inevitably, it always seems to be pizzas. So you'll go to these really great pizza places, which make the most amazing pizzas, but probably aren't great for your health. So I have gotten better with it. So at home, I try and eat a lot more healthily. So nothing in particular, but just not try and cut down sugars, and I don't drink too many fizzy drinks, the odd trip to the pub and stuff like that. But I think down route, it's a lot harder. So it's more important when you're back home to try.
Well, thank you so much. Well, that's it for me.
I mean, I don't want to, people always get scared with the medical. So I don't want to put you off. It's really isn't as bad as it sounds. But, and it's not a case of if there was something wrong, you'd instantly lose your job. It would be okay. They would look to see what treatments there were and to get you better. And, you know, they are on your side.
All that talk about food is a good segue into a question that Mona had. Mona, do you want to come on the chat? Or on the mic, sorry.
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. Okay, the first one that's in the chat. I need to see what I wrote. Yeah. Do you get to pick? Do you have to have economy food, or can you pick any like first class, business, or economy?
So another question I get asked quite a lot. I don't. So we essentially have crew food loaded on the aircraft for us. So all the food you see loaded, like, you know, all the food that you'll eat as a passenger. In addition to that, there'll be food loaded for us just so that we definitely get food on certain sectors, because obviously you don't want the guys looking after you flying on an empty stomach, so to speak. Quite often, especially on long haul, probably less on short haul, but on long haul, any spare meals there are, so mostly from business, or if there is first food available, that'll get offered to you as well. Most guys will take that because it is good food. Not to eat it all the time probably wouldn't be good for you, but it does taste good. So people do accept it. But the crew food's generally fine as well.
And my second question is, if there was anywhere you could go that you haven't yet gone to, where would it be?
That is a good question. I've been quite fortunate in the job. So staff travel is amazing. It really it allows you the opportunity to see so many places you otherwise wouldn't. So in terms of flying, for places I fly to, I fly mostly around Europe, a little bit of North Africa, and I used to be a tiny bit of the Middle East. So Amman in Jordan and Beirut and Tel Aviv. With the pandemic, that's slightly reduced, but I used to love flying to Tel Aviv a lot. So because it was always a night flight, which was painful, but it was always quite nice when you got there. I think in terms of where I'd like to actually fly to, I'd love to fly to Keflavik in Iceland, because some of those flights, you get to see the Northern Lights. I did have one, but I swapped it with someone else. They needed it a bit more than I did. But I'd really like to get there. And in terms of just generally travel, I haven't really been to the Far East too much. So I've done quite a bit of America, and went to Cape Town a couple of times year before, which is an amazing place. So maybe see more of South Africa or the Far East.
Thank you.
And the next question we have is from Angus. Angus, do you want to come on the mic? Okay, I'll ask it for you. What is the worst experience you've had flying?
Worst experience? I have had a couple of medical emergencies on board, so they're never fun for anybody, least of all the person who has to go through that, and particularly the crew, because they're out there trying to deal with it. Fortunately, both times they were okay. So that's the main thing. But they're never pleasant, because you're never really sure how serious it could be. The crew are really good at what they do, and they normally, if there's a doctor on board, they'll provide us with a bit of advice, or we can call a doctor in somewhere in America who will try and diagnose as well. But essentially you're torn between the fact that you've got 100 and 200 people on board, so you don't want to rush anything because you don't want to put them in risk, but at the same time you want to try and maximize the chances of this person being okay and getting them medical assistance. So they're never particularly, I think they're probably some of the worst. In terms of probably the most difficult is, I think, when the weather's really bad. So I had one just before the first pandemic. I don't know if you remember, it was Storm Kira, I think it was, about a year ago, which was really, really bad. And we'd just flown out to Geneva. And on the way into Geneva, it was we were just flying through cloud. It was just really bumpy, black, not particularly pleasant. And then I remember as we were coming into land, just because you can see the runway, you fly over the lake, so you can see the runway. And just behind the runway was just this wall of, black, just black. And you'd see the odd lightning strike go off. And I remember we landed and thought this could be not particularly great. And it ended up that the lightning was so bad, we couldn't disembark for about an hour and a half. Once we did disembark, we then looked at the weather on the way back, and there was a lot of weather around London, and Heathrow closed, which almost never happens. So it meant that we had people on the plane for hours in the hope that we could get them to Heathrow, to where they were trying to get to. And then unfortunately the flight was cancelled that evening, and the next day we managed to fly back, and it was still quite bumpy, but it wasn't quite as bad as the guys that had actually flown during the day. So the weather ones are the worst, because fuel's quite a finite resource on board a plane, so you just need to think a bit more. But generally there's always a safe place to go.
Thank you. And I know Georgie has a similar question. Georgie, do you want to come on the mic and ask? I can ask for her. I think maybe she's having some mic issues, but Georgie wants to know, have you ever nearly crashed?
No, my landings aren't that bad. But there's never a time I've nearly crashed. No, I think modern aircraft are quite safe, and then it's sort of drilled into you from day one of flying training that to avoid flying lower than necessary. And part of our procedures are to make sure that if we're flying below a certain height for that particular area, that we're completely sure about our position. So it's something that we're quite stringent on as well. I'm not going to lie and say I haven't had some firm landings, but nothing that I would call a crash, no.
Thank you. So we actually have a question from Natalie as well in the chat.
Oh, is it okay? Thank you. I didn't want to take the space for anyone else. But obviously this year has been really terrible for the travel industry. I mean, it's been absolutely devastating. So how has it affected you? And I guess even from a standpoint of your flying hours must have been hugely, hugely reduced. But yeah, it's obviously travel's been decimated, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's interesting. I was in the simulator yesterday and so every 2 years you've got to do a check where somebody will watch you actually fly on the line. But because, so that's completely routine. It's nothing abnormal. But because of the pandemic, we've had to do some of that in the simulator instead, with dispensation from the CAA. And we were talking about it yesterday because prior to COVID, I think I'd done over 800 hours flying in that year. And I think last year I did less than 100. So that's a massive reduction. I think you're right. The pandemic has been really tough for certain industries, not just aviation, but I think aviation has been one of the worst affected. It's probably one of the worst things that could have happened to aviation in that you've had to stop travel. But what was really painful actually was like a lot of companies, we had to lose some of our colleagues, and that I think for anybody that's been through that or where you've had friends lose their jobs and people you know really well, that does hurt. And I think it hurt everyone at BA as well. So stuff like that's been really difficult. I'd say if there was, I wouldn't call it an upside, but certainly an almost an effect of it is that everybody sort of understands a little bit more. Everyone's a bit more, as in generally the public are a lot more understanding with that. But equally as colleagues, we seem to have tightened around each other. So really rallied around each other as well. And that was really nice to see that, you know, for some people it was really difficult, really, really difficult times. So they might have had to, I know a few of them had to move houses because they've been fine, but their other half has lost jobs. And so that puts a strain on family, puts a strain on children and stuff like that. And they've said how during the pandemic they've felt supported by the people they fly with, but equally support organizations that that British Airways have offered us as well. So I think it's been tough, but equally, you know, we're professionals, so for a lot of people, actually getting back into flying has been the really familiar part. It's the part that we know how to do best. So the standards have been kept high anyway.
Well, that's good. Thanks for answering. I think it's just really interesting, and you would hope, I think, with all the pent up demand, that you hopefully, when things do open up, I think that's one of the things people are really looking forward to, isn't it? Is actually being able to go and see family and friends and go on holiday. So hopefully the industry will begin to recover and hopefully recover quickly.
Yeah. And I think one of the most common things that I think people have been saying, certainly in the last year, is it's reminded them just how much they love this job, as in how much they love flying. It's not that it was in doubt before, but I think sometimes you can take stuff like that for granted. And then going through this, every single day you're at work, it's almost a bit of a blessing. So you're really grateful for it, yeah. And then, like you say, I volunteered at a vaccination centre in Twickenham, and all the people we speak to there always have the same question, you know, when can I head abroad? So I'm hoping it filters through into bookings at some point, even if later in the year.
Oh, thank you. That's really great. Thank you.
Let's go to Demi next.
Okay, so I've kind of got like three questions. I'm really sorry.
No, we're quite all right.
So do you ever have to stop halfway through a journey due to weather?
I wouldn't say stop. There are times, so like I said, weather's generally the, on short haul anyway, it's mostly the limiting factor, particularly around Europe, which is so homogenized in terms of the aviation setup. So weather's generally the biggest issues you have. In terms of stopping halfway, no. I have had to happen before is a couple of times you might be going somewhere. So there was a flight to Milan, I remember, and Milan in the summer gets quite a lot of thunderstorms just because of where it sits in relation to the seasonal wind. And we arrived in Milan after, and I think it was an hour and a half flight, and there was a particular type of thunderstorm, the ones we try and avoid, right over the airfields and blocking the approach. So obviously it would have been unsafe to try and land in that particular condition, so we ended up going south to the airfield and just flying around in circles until such a time that we could make an approach. It required a little bit of thinking on our parts, and what we did was switch the runways and come in the other way to try and resolve that. I've had it happen in Geneva as well, where we're going in and the airport's closed because of the weather. So I wouldn't say stopped, but I've had to hold and then divert. We diverted to Nice then. But it's never permanent. It's never a case of, you don't fly all the way from Geneva to Nice and then tell the passengers to get on a bus to Geneva. No, we'll stay there just until the weather clears and it's safe to go back, and we'll fly people back. And most times it's been on the day as well.
Thank you. Can I also ask, what's the best advice for someone that doesn't like flying?
Yeah, so we get quite a lot of people, it's varying degrees of people who are, or their fear of flying. So some people come on board and you won't really notice until you start talking to them, and then they'll tell you. So they've hidden it really well. And then you'll get other people who get as far as the aircraft door and just break down in tears because they're just so terrified. So generally we try and, if there's time, we'll try and bring them into the cockpit before, or one of us will go out and speak to them. Fear of flying is quite unique. I always tell people that it's it's a weird phenomenon because you're in a tube, a metal tube, 10 miles above the ground. And if you're sat, you're not even facing a window that's in front of you. So even if you're sat at a window, it's to the side and you've got a really limited view. So it's a really unusual experience flying. For most people, it's just that I think a sense that they're not in control, so that you are trusted as pilots with and crew with safety of flight, so with someone's safety in their life in a particular way. So I think that's generally the thing. And the thing I tell people is that you go through, there was all that training before I started flying training, so making sure I was ready for the job, and then all the flying training itself, and then all the continued training. So I go in the simulator 2 days every 6 months, and just, it's quite grueling. You just get put through your paces, dealing with all sorts of scenarios and emergencies. And I tell them that if to go through all that is should reassure them that anything that happens on that flight, we're completely equipped to deal with and ready. Generally that does the job, and then we'll try and get out and speak to them halfway through the flight, and normally they're fine. They're normally, no more concerns after that.
Thank you. And I know we have a question from Sat.
Thank you. So it's been really interesting hearing about behind the scenes sort of thing. And I was just wondering, sort of, BA is such a prestigious airline, and like you said, you were able to get on one of the programs. And I was just wondering if you sort of had any advice for the young people, because, I was nervous on a driving test. So imagine a BA pilot test sort of thing. Do you have any tips for the young people about, from your experience? Because obviously, especially if you wanted to be a pilot, you must have been under loads of pressure to get that placement on that scheme. And like, there, everyone here is looking at, you know, doing GCSEs and studying in the future. Do you have any advice about like how you coped with that? Like, I'm sure you probably struggled to sleep the night before, but, and also like, how do you deal with stress now? Like, because it must be quite tough when you got, you know, you've got flying through different time zones, and you know you've got people's lives in your hands, and how do you kind of cope with that stress and pressure, and how did you do that for to become that BA pilot that you are today?
Cool. I'll take that in two parts. The first part, just about really going for it and dealing with that in terms of the exams and stuff. I actually think there's quite a lot of similarities with school, in that before your exams, you're as prepared as you can be. As long as you know that you've done the work before, you've put in the revision, if you've had questions, you've asked your teachers. And I always had questions for my flying instructors, and they're always brilliant, and everyone wants to help you. So you get to that point where you know you've done as much as you can before the actual examination itself. So I'd say, yeah, of course you're still nervous. And I'd say that's quite normal. I found once you're actually in the seat, so the worst part for me anyway personally is that bit just before you go into the exam. So it's just the waiting around. Like, once you're actually in the seat, once you've strapped in, put your headset on, done all the things you'd normally do, just feels like another flight, albeit you're conscious there is someone watching you. And I'd say it's quite similar with school, because my abiding memory of exams, I always used to hate that morning when, you know, you'd have very little to eat, when you should have a good breakfast, have very little to eat, head up and just wait outside the exam hall. But once you actually got into the exam and you opened the paper and got into the flow of it, it was absolutely fine. I think my main tips are, especially for young people, is it's okay to be stressed now and again. It doesn't make you abnormal, or it doesn't mean you're going to fail or anything like that. It's just completely normal. And one of the great things about getting older, as I'm sure anyone that's left school will tell you, is that you're able to put things in perspective a lot more. So that one exam, you suddenly realize it's not life changing. It's not going to, if you don't do as well in it, it's really not going to end your life. That's not going to be the end. There's always another avenue to get to where you want. And I think that's something that young people in particular, just because they don't have the life experience, don't fully appreciate, but it's very true. So that one GCSE, it's really not going to affect much in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, you should try and do as well as you can and make sure you prepare. But if the exam doesn't go as you planned, it's not, I wouldn't say it's not the end of anything, frankly. The BA exams, I think even experienced pilots, every 6 months, nobody likes going in the simulator. It's a sort of begrudging, because you know that when you leave the check, you are much better. So you'll have learned a lot more in those 2 days. You walk away a better pilot. And I think what a lot of people try and do is just try and remember that that's what the aim of all this stuff is, that you're trying to, it gives you an opportunity to get better. So it doesn't matter whether you maybe don't do as well as you want. The important thing is that you learn from that when you then walk away and then can take that into other things. In terms of stress, I think the great thing about flying is you don't take your work home with you. So you need to stay on top of things like procedures and any new updates and stuff like that. But I wouldn't call that stressful. That's just part of the job, I think. It'd be like, you know, buying a pair of shoes for work, or it's something akin to that. It's really just so mundane. I think the only time people really feel stress is generally either if there's something going on outside of flying. And it does happen. I think everyone happens. So like, you'll get guys who are getting divorced, or they've had a death in the family, or they're worried about their kids or something like that. I found some of the most worried are pilots whose partner is waiting to give birth, and then they might be, you know, just they're always slightly anxious that they'll be down route when that happens. So I'd say those are probably the main sources of stress. But the good, great thing about BA is it's a really open culture. So what you're encouraged to do is if you're not, if you don't think you're fit to fly at all, there'll be no blowback whatsoever for calling up and saying, you know, I don't think I'm in a right state of mind to do it. And you'll be supported through that. So you'll be given time away and then checked in on just to make sure you're doing okay. So I think that helps quite a lot. In terms of my stuff, I quite like the idea of routine. So I'll always try and do something when I get home. I always try and get up at the same time, try and go to the gym at the same time. Just so that when you're home, it really is, it's quite a powerful trigger just to remind you that, okay, flying is flying and now you're home and you don't need to think about work or what's going on there.
Thank you. I know we're getting to the end of our time and we've got a few more questions. Grace, I know you had a question.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about obviously like global warming, climate change is on the forefront of everyone's mind. I just wondered from your perspective what you think the future of flying is, because I've read interesting things about maybe electric planes or like lower emissions fuels, or yeah, just be interested to hear your take.
Yeah, so it's interesting because that is probably the elephant in the room, I think, with regards to flying. I think there's a recognition within flying that it can't just go on as it is. I mean, even if climate change wasn't a big deal, eventually we would run out of oil, basically. So I think there is beginning to be a move to look at what we can move into instead. So what can we use as a fuel source, so to speak? You mentioned electric. I think, yeah, electric does have potential. The issue is with batteries for the sort of range that you're trying to fly, they become very heavy. So it stops being feasible at a certain point. I know British Airways have, or parent company IAG, have invested in hydrogen. So a firm that's looking into hydrogen as a potential fuel source. And I know that there have been trials on aircraft using hydrogen to fly fly the entire flight on it, or maybe a hybrid mix between biofuels and kerosene. My personal view is probably that hydrogen is probably the most promising initially, and then going into the future, it could be that by that point we've gotten batteries that are small enough, light enough, and yet deliver the sort of capacity that you need to make flights work. The real paradox is that the longer flights are the ones that emit the most carbon, but at the same time they're the ones that are most, I'd say, necessary for flying, because there's no other way to get from, say, London to Australia with, well, in that time frame. If you'd take a boat, it would take a month or weeks anyway, and so flying is really the only viable option between there. And yet that's also the one that would be most limited by, that it would be most difficult to use renewable fuel sources on, so things like hydrogen. So I do think hydrogen will start, and I think it'll start on short haul in particular, so around Europe, around the UK. And as the technology improves or the fuels improve, hopefully that'll extend to, well, I have no doubt actually that it will extend to the sort of big flying one day. I just think it's probably about 10 or so more years away. But there's other things you can do in the meantime. So one of the things we try and do, and it helps from a company point of view, is if you can minimize where you use fuel. So we use things like statistical fuel rather than just going full tanks everywhere we go. So then it's at least a lot more fuel effective in that regard, yeah.
Thank you. So I'm going to give the final question to Georgie. Georgie, do you want to come on the mic?
I've never been in a plane, so what does it actually feel like?
Feels amazing. It's probably how I'd... Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm going to be biased, but I think even from going in light aircraft, and I would always recommend actually anyone that you know, thinks they might have an interest in flying, just getting 20 minutes in a light aircraft. Yeah, it's just a feeling of freedom. I mean, to go to work every day and see the sun, and you see it every single day. There's never a day where it's cloudy when you're flying, per se. Yeah, it's a real sense of freedom, I think, is what most people will say, and I completely agree with that.
Oh, thank you so much. Can we all come off the mic and give Gokul a massive round of applause, please?
Not at all.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It's been so great, and I think you've answered so many of our questions. And I know there's a few young people on the call who want to be pilots themselves, so I think this has been really interesting for them.
Yeah, and I'd say good luck. Yeah, we've all wanted to be there, so I have no doubt I'll be sat next to you one day. You can tell me what to do.
Thanks so much. And I just wanted to say as well, there were some really good plane pilot themed memes that we've been sharing as profile pictures.
I've seen a few of them. Yeah. One did make me chuckle. I'll see if I can find it. But yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for having me, guys. All the best with exams and just general life. And hopefully I'll see you on board one day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
What did everyone think? Did all your questions get answered?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Angus says good in the chat. I'm seeing a thumbs up from Demi.
Georgie, I liked your question. Actually, I thought all the questions were great. Oh, Mona, you've got your hand up. Sorry, I was just going to say, Georgie, I like that. What does it feel like? Really interesting question. Over to you, Mona.
The closest thing I've done to, like, maybe flying a simulator is when I was little, I went to Kidzania and they have like those pilot simulators where you can fly a plane.
What did it feel like?
It was just, well, I'm not sure, because it doesn't move, so you can't really feel like you're flying a plane, but it does have like all the controllers and the switches and stuff.
That's still really cool. I'm very jealous.
I liked your question set about stress and exams. That was really good, and I liked what he said about that, giving that advice. You know, you wouldn't think it's quite similar to a school exam, and it seems like it. Yeah, go for it, Sam.
No, thanks, Corey. I think it's just nice to hear about, like he was saying, how they cope and how he got through it. Because I can imagine if you want to be a pilot and get in the BA exams, like, you know, trying to do a trial for Real Madrid type thing, you know.
Definitely. 100%. I can see in the chat that Rosie's put, you can go into aviation through college. Yeah. That's nice, and that's what you're studying, right, Rosie? So I hope this was really interesting. If you want to, you know, send some questions directly to Gokul, we can do that. We can always reach out to Gokul and his colleague Mel, who couldn't make it today, to find out more about British Airways and those careers.
Can you ask him a question for me?
Yeah.
Of course. Is it, do you want a free ticket? Because I'm joking.
No. Who's the most famous person they've ever had on the plane?
Ooh.
Wow. Such a good question.
Fabulous.
Thanks so much, guys. Really enjoyed it. Love the questions, the memes, the energy. It's very positive.
Good to see you. We'll see you all soon.
Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Bye, and thank you.
Bye,
thanks,
guys.
Great.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye. Well, thank you so much, Gokul. That was really fun, entertaining and informative episode. I didn't want to say too much because we just were firing the questions at you and you answered them all really well, and it was really interesting to get to learn from those. We have young people at Renaissance Foundation that are looking to become pilots, that want to find out more about how to get into that career, and speaking with you not only helped us learn about that but also get excited about the future and the insight that you gave us about the
the future insight of the industry and like how to get involved with that. It just seemed really exciting and was really refreshing to get some expert insight but from a professional. We really, really appreciate that. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Thank you so much everyone at home for listening to this. And most importantly, thank you so much to all of the young people for taking part in the conversation, and the ones that couldn't take part while we were recording, thank you for listening to this back, because we know there's so much that everyone can learn from this and we just want to share everything we get to learn. So to keep this podcast going, it's been a year since we started. You know, this is our 27th published episode, so it makes a massive difference to us if you like, share, subscribe, and make a big shout about our content online, because we want to get noticed. If you want to find out more about Renaissance Foundation and how we support young carers and hospital patients in London, head over to our website, renaissance-foundation.com.